Welcome, everyone, to Foreclosures Gone Wild Power Hour for April 2010. I'm Dustin Griffin. I'm here with my good friend and short sale expert, Kimberly Frank. Kimberly, hey. Welcome to the call.
Thanks a lot, Dustin. I'm excited to be on the call tonight. We've got a lot of great calls or conversations on the new HAPL suggestion, not law, different things, different rules, what's going on. And I'm excited to answer a lot of the questions that we had from last month, along with all the questions coming in tonight.
Right. We had a lot of questions last month that we didn't get through, so we're going to try to get to a lot of those tonight. So I just want to remind everyone, if you have any good questions for Kimberly, please send them in through the GoToWebinar interface.
Yeah, they have to be good questions.
Yeah, send in some good questions. We're looking forward to answering on tonight's call. Anything to do with short sales, foreclosure, what's going on out there today. So use the GoToWebinar interface. If you haven't used the GoToWebinar interface before, you should see a little thing down at the bottom of your interface that says questions with a little plus sign next to it. Just click on the plus sign, and then you can type in your question and send it to us. And we'll do our best to get those answered throughout the webinar. Okay. So, Kimberly, I do want to turn over the controls to you so that I can monitor the question. And I just want to get started, as usual, by asking you to take a quick minute to tell us a little about yourself for all the new folks that are on the call who haven't heard from you before. And tell us how you got started in the business and why you made short sales your main focus.
All righty. Well, a little bit of background about myself. I started investing in 1998. I had worked for attorneys for 18 years and bought that No Money Down course that everyone I'm quite sure is familiar with. Started going through all the seminars and started doing buying, fixing, and flipping. And after doing that for about 6 years and the industry changing, I ended up going into the short sale field. I have the 18 years of legal experience. I became a realtor. I am a licensed real estate broker, mortgage broker, Michigan, Florida, you name it. It just seems to start piling up here. So you don't have to have a license to do short sales depending upon your state if you want to get paid for them. So those are certain rules and regulations in different states. I relocated from the Michigan market. Because of foreclosures going wild here in the Florida market, and thought if I'm already doing houses and making money in Michigan in the lowest economy and worst economy, then I might as well just move to Florida, which I did lock, stock, and barrel. And those of you who are on the call this evening, my whole focus was is to build a team, and Dustin and I have started working together in the Atlanta, Georgia area, and building a team. So those of you who are on the call, we get excited because we want more individuals involved in helping sellers right now. And at my last three-day training event, we had four ministers who had attended the training event and was coming to help the congregation. And I was just, it gives me goosebumps just thinking about it. So I ended up doing the short sales because that's all I saw coming. Definitely, I was tired of being in rehab land, and those of you who are rehabbers, you know who you are. You know, there are 12 steps to get out of rehab, and you're looking at the 12th step right now because you're on this call this evening. We're going to be talking about short sales, who's doing them, why to do them, and we're also going to be talking about the proposed short sale guidelines that did pass April 5th, which is kind of funny and hilarious, and honestly, since I'm in the short sale world doing deals and mitigating deals, closing deals, I really didn't send out a blog or response to this half a joke. But tonight's the night I'm going to share what a joke it is and where we're going with it and how it's not going to affect us and how it's just a pipe dream. So I'm excited to be on the call tonight, Dustin. Thank you very much for hosting it. I know you've been quite busy. And, again, I was in Panama City during spring break. Woohoo! Talk about exciting last week. We closed on a deal for Simone and Mark, which was phenomenal. It was great, exciting, their first deal. You know, they've got like 17 or 18 in the hopper, but sometimes it takes some momentum. Once you get over that first deal, it's just ready to take off. I was at Jerry Kluck's condo, so I will be posting some pictures with the help of my sister because I'm not the picture poster child. And you'll see how beautiful and lovely it is. And we'd like to give you all a link so that if you're looking for a great condo, four bedroom, four bath, that's the place to be. Hottest, greatest, and the best. That's all I can say. I can only say thank you, Jerry Kluck, because that was my gift for helping him with the closing, which was phenomenal as a partner, not as a realtor. I had one realtor. I'm sitting down at the pool, Dustin. And I'm in the hot lives in the hot tub, and they said, boy, you're just selling that condo for that friend of yours. And they said, well, as a realtor, you're not supposed to take any gifts or anything. I said, well, thank God I'm in the deal, and I wasn't just the realtor. I was a beneficial interest involved with, so I was involved as a seller. So, it was funny. It was funny. There was two people there that ended up with Jerry. Number. She said, boy, you're just a seller, aren't you? I said, well, hey. I said, I got a free gift. I'm going to fill the other weeks for him. So it's phenomenal.
Yep, and I got to give thank Jerry, too. I'm going down to his Seagrove condo Saturday for a one-week vacation. So that's the other condo he has down there in Florida. It's smaller. It's in Seagrove right next to Seaside. Gorgeous area. And we just love it. And we got an extra condo down there for my parents. They're going to join us down there as well. So we're looking really looking forward to it. So thanks again, Jerry.
All right.
Appreciate that.
So if you all want a good vacation, email us in, Skype us in, or on the questions. We'll give you links. Feel free to contact us because we highly recommend Jerry's condos.
Yes, we do. So let's go ahead and get started, Kimberly, taking some questions. Again, everybody, please send them in via the GoToWebinar interface. I also sent out an email and have some questions that came in via email and from the last call. So we're going to start with Robert's question. All right. So Robert asked, when dealing with a lender, what strategy does Kimberly use to dispute the BPO the lender is using to establish their short sale price?
That's the perfect question to start with. Those of you who are on the 12 weeks webinar that we've got going on through Foreclosures Gone Wild and Super Smart, we went through step by step of all the different ways to influence the BPO. And that was a really great 2 hours that we did last night. Basically, I'm going to tell you that is the only way to start off with a great short sale is meeting your BPO agent out there. If you do not and you have to start disputing the value, then you're going to need low comparables. You're going to need a repair bid from not just one contractor, two contractors. You're going to need a letter about any sex offenders are out there, any information. You'll need any information about HOAs are high or that the HOA association is belly up or that maybe we were just sharing last night on one of Jerry's deals is that the tennis courts have no nets and there's grass growing in the cracks and that there's no money to open up the pool. All these things that really help dispute the value on the short sale. And that's very important for you to do because if you don't, then they're going to argue some more. I was just on the phone with SBS on Simone and Mark's deal. Another deal, we already had it approved, and we were in midstream ready to close. It just took a little bit longer to find a buyer because it was approved in 30 days. So she didn't have her buyer lined up. And I'm arguing, over $3,500 just to get it through. But they told me if I send this amount in that we'll go ahead and you know, they'll give me back the approval letter. But I was disputing their value. They came back in at $75,000, and we had a short sale at $50,000. So I sent in all the low comparables. I sent in all the information, like I just informed you, of the repair bids and everything. And lo and behold, guess what? The BPO agent did not put in any repairs on that house. Zero, zippo, nothing. So they had a reason to send it up the line to the manager or supervisor to review, and then it ends up going to the investor. So please make sure that when you play your cards, it's like playing a deck of cards. I wish they'd just tell you what the BPO is, but, you know, they don't. They do that on purpose because they want to see he who speaks first loses. So you need to slowly feed in this information to argue about getting another BPO or going back in at the value that your buyer has. And depending upon if there is a foreclosure sale like we've got one going on right now, you might have to go in high and then lose your buyer or argue that it didn't appraise because it doesn't appraise it if they're way out of whack and that they need to have another BPO. So there's an art at negotiating. And that's why I really want you to be aware of it. Each mitigator is different. Each facts are different. Each file is different. So you really need to know your file and really push it through. And pictures definitely paint 1,000 words. All I can say is that I love D-Flow when it comes to negotiating, and that is our short sale system we're using that Dustin created with some of my comments about what I use in my office, a lot of my comments, should I say. And we ended up using that strategically so that now the BPO agent, or excuse me, the mitigator can click on a link, which has been brilliant, Dustin, brilliant, that you did, that they can now see live pictures so that you can tell them, hey, look, this picture does paint 1,000 words. Just push this link because attachments sometimes they can't open. So having the right system will allow you to cash more checks. I know it was long-winded.
No, that's okay. You know, we had a question come up last month about the BPO. I don't remember who it was that asked. Is it ethical or legal to attempt to influence the BPO or appraisal?
Well, I'm glad you said that. Basically, the eyes and the ears are sent out by for the BPO for the mortgage companies. The mortgage company and the appraisers that come out, their job is to evaluate it. On a BPO, there are three values. There is an after-repaired value. There is a, well, let's go in the order. There's an as-is quick sale value, which I call as-is value, 30-day value. And that's what we are influencing. All we're doing is telling them that this is, we want them to consider the 30-day quick sale value. And it's true. It's 85% of what the repair value or the after repaired value is or being on the market for 6 months. So, again, there's a 30-day, a 90-day, and that is being on the market and after repaired, and then an as is on the market, how long it's going to take to sell it. So there's certain things that we want to do. We're influencing them just to give them the three values. Now, when the bank gets these values back, Dustin, they choose which value they want. There are three different values. There's a 30-day quick sale. There's 90 days or maybe 120 days, depending upon the market. And then there's a repaired value after it sits on the market and goes back on. So it's really not influencing other than the fact that we want to show all the things that are wrong with it. And the market is what the market is. If there are low comps and you want to sell a house in 30 days, you're not going to get top dollar, sweetie. You're going to get a 30-day quick sale value. And that is an as-is 30 days. So all I'm asking them to do is give the bank the true 30-day quick sale value. Don't go high. Don't, you know, because you can go high because you've got the other two to go high at, but make sure they understand, okay, if I waited 4 months on the market, I could get this amount of money. If I repaired it and waited 6 months on the market, then I could get this amount of money. But what happens is that sometimes the BPO agents will not give the right 30-day quick sale value, and they will give a four-month value, which harms the bank, because what happens is that the bank will have holding costs all involved on this.
Mm-hmm.
There's interest, there's attorney fees, and with this half a joke, there's even more, there's all kinds of more fees involved that it's really funny that, you know, there's a lot of money involved. And so selling it quicker versus waiting 6 months is called an REO net spreadsheet, is something that is used widely between negotiators. Depending upon the mitigator negotiator, it is there. They make a decision. Does it make sense to short sell it for a 30-day quick sell value, or should I just wait, let it go to REO, which it has to go through the bankruptcy, or the, not the bankruptcy, the foreclosure process, and then it gets back up again on the market. And by then, sometimes the value that they end up getting for it, paying for a realtor, paying for the taxes, paying for the HOAs, paying for the maintenance, paying for the interest on the money, paying for the attorney fees, those are all the things on the REO net sheet. It's smarter and wiser to take the 30-day quick sell value sooner and quicker. And a lot of them do that, but there are REO agents that come out and they know they're going to get the listing, so they shoot it high. And so you talk about, is it ethical? I have REO agents that will come out and shoot it high, list the same property that I had an offer on, and get the bank $30,000 to $40,000 less. Now, I am an agent. I am a broker. I'm not bashing all REO agents, but y'all know who you are, and you all know that, you know, when you're talking about what is ethical, they need to show a 30-day quick sell value, Dustin. That's what the bank's asking.
Yeah, and another thing is all realtors obviously aren't created equal.
Yep.
A lot of realtors who are out doing BPOs aren't too good at buying and selling houses. You know what I mean? Therefore,
yep.
The only job or the only work they can get is out doing these little $75 an hour BPOs. And if they're the one determining what they think the house is worth by simply driving by it real quick and, you know, quickly pulling a few comps and slapping it together, I think it's our duty as the buyer who's going to be paying cash for this house to make sure that BPO is realistic and not overinflated just because they're trying to impress the lender and hope they can get an REO listing later.
Yeah, so, you know, it's a buyer's market.
Yeah, it's our duty. I mean, because in a short sale situation, the bank is like the seller and we're the buyer. They want the highest price possible. We want the lowest price possible. And it's up to both of us to influence the price where we can meet in the middle. They're going to try to get us up, we're going to try to get them down, and we're going to meet somewhere in the middle and get this deal done if it gets done at all. So it is up to us to influence that BPO agent or appraiser who's out there to show them everything that's wrong with the property so they can make an informed decision. You just mentioned a BPO a few minutes ago, Kimberly, where they didn't even bother listing any repairs.
Yeah.
Well, think about it. Does a realtor know what how much it's going to cost to put on a roof? Do they know how much it's going to cost to put in new flooring? They know how much it's going to, you know, cost to rewire the electrical box if it needs it? Probably not. So it's up to us to share that information with them if we want to be able to influence that BPO in a positive way and let the lender know what kind of repairs the house needs. Because they're, for $75, they're probably not going to take the time to do it.
No, they're just taking a swag, scientific A guess. So I skipped the second, the A. But you guys can take a guess on that one, too.
All right. Next question. John Paul asks, I used to do short sales several years ago when houses still had equity in them. How do you do short sales these days and make a profit if the house have no equity in them? How does that work?
Well, John, all of our houses have no equity in them, and so we create profit out of thin air. Basically, by influencing the VPO to look at the 30-day quick sale value allows us to go ahead and get a short sale, and by the time we get the short sale, we end up reselling it and make sometimes a small profit, sometimes a big profit. It all depends. If you guys understand the short sale process, first of all, it's not about all the big numbers, and I know you all like to hear the big numbers. It's about volume. It's about taking some money on some deal, making it up on the other. It's about stuffing the pipeline, because guess what? I cannot wave my magic wand over all these files in my office and say, approved, 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 because I would run through here and just give me what I want. It is up to the bank. It is up to the BPO agent by giving the true facts of the case. And if you have a strategic system of doing short sales, it's easy to create that equity in the property. And then you have to sell the property to get the profit, and having that system is really important for you, which we have for you. So it's easy. All houses are upside down. They have to give you something. Are you trying to get to the next slide? Hey, Dustin, are you there? I got lost.
I'm here.
Oh, okay.
I had myself muted.
Okay.
Next question is from Mick. He asks, how long does it take to put the short sale package together? What all goes into the package? And what happens if the seller's missing required pieces of the package?
Oh, that's a phenomenal question. Short sale package. We have a purchase agreement. We have a HUD. A HUD 1, which is a settlement statement, so that if you've ever bought a house, you've gotten a HUD 1, so it shows how much the bank is going to make. We have, are you doing that? Yep. We have also the hardship letter. We have the bank statements. We have the pay stubs. We have the tax returns. We have now, we want the sellers to sign a T, write this down, 4506, a T. 4506 form, because the bank keeps asking for it and they delay in my negotiations. So we also have a listing agreement.
Kimberly?
Yes.
What was a T-4506 form?
Thank you. That is an IRS request that they can contact IRS and get proof that their taxes are correct. In fact, I had five deals scheduled to close when Coach Evelyn and Cheryl cashed a check, and out of those five deals, two went through. The other three had to get that T-4506 signed on the end buyer's side because of financing things, because people are lying about their taxes. What it does, it allows the mortgage lender to send in a request to IRS to say, prove to me that these are their taxes. What they're trying to do is make sure that the seller's not hiding any money and they didn't give a bogus tax return. So when you have all of this package together, along with a proof of funds letter showing that the buyer can close, that's a complete package. You also need to write on the top of all of the loan or the pages the loan numbers, so that if, in fact, when you're faxing it in and it gets cut off, they can figure out what file it goes to. However, I can tell you, if it goes in pieces, please refax it all in one piece, because some people get tired, and guess where it goes? In the trash, believe it or not. What happens if the seller is missing the required pieces of the package? Well, it sets. They don't work on it. They find some excuse where it's at. When you call in, they say, I don't have it, refax it. Oh, I forgot. The authorization to release information. I'm doing this from my head. I should have pulled my checklist. But you need to have all of that. The authorization to release information allows you to even speak to them. Plus, I have an enclosure letter that goes with all of it, requesting that they contact me and that I am the BPO contact person and I need a BPO. I also ask for a payoff letter from them, because when the first wants it from the second, it's a pain in the butt. They know they owe it all this money. They just want to see how much of a loss everybody's taking. Everybody's taking a loss. Just get over it and move on. But I had one bank lady tell me it's okay because I'm taking a loss too. She wanted me to be included. I said, I already have. I'm working on Bank of America loans. I'm not doing that no more. So needless to say, that's what you need to have in your package. If you decide to do your own negotiating. Save your time and effort. Make sure you have a complete package. My company policy is I need a complete package in order to submit everything because Mr. and Mrs. Seller are like kids. They are just like kids. If you don't get what you want or need now, good luck getting it later. And you need to have that rapport because life gets in their way. They move out of the house. They forget about you. They forget that their house is in foreclosure until somebody calls them. And then they might respond to you. So get everything you need now. Make sure you have good, good communication with your seller. And make sure you keep in contact with them and get updated financials every 30 to 60 days. I would just have that communication because short sales, depending upon which state you're in and depending upon where you're at, will take some time. At the last three-day training event, I suggested that you look for short sales where the seller's done loan mods, been in the house for a year, that it's been a while since they haven't paid. Not these ones that are just getting behind because these banks are getting very tired of processing all these things and it takes more time to process the ones that are just starting. If you get one on the back end, they're ready to go a lot quicker. 30 days. We saw that happen on Simone's deal. We just didn't have a buyer to close it quick enough. I'm still working to marry the two together. And that's going to be done tomorrow.
Excellent. So you've got another closing coming up, huh?
That's what I'm shooting for. We were just discussing, should have we waited for a bigger check or shall we take a smaller check and just do profit? And she said, let's do profit. Okay, here's another question.
Yeah, this is from Mick as well. Besides influencing the BPO, what are the second and third most important aspects of a successful short sale transaction? What should I focus on mastering?
A complete, nice,
and also, which lenders are best to work with?
Oh, sorry, I missed that. A complete, nice, clean short sale package. And I did forget the one thing in that package. I should have pulled my checklist. I apologize. You need a financial statement from your seller because the financial statement is how they can – it's a snapshot of where they're at now. And what I find is that the students will have the seller slap something together. They don't even look. They don't even add the financial statement together. They just throw it in here, and then they expect me to submit it to the bank and say, hey, look, there, it doesn't even have a total here. It doesn't have all the facts in here. You need to have a clean package, complete package, and be ready to go. Now, you did not hear me say I include a repair bed. You need to keep some things in your hand when you're playing poker so that you're later able to dispute value. So focusing on having a clean package, working with GMAC, ASC, Lit and Loan, SBS, SP like in Paul S, HSBC, and staying away from Bank of America will get you quicker deals through. Can you tell I love Bank of America?
You're right. All right, let's see. Next question is from Karen. She asks, how do you market a house for sale in advance of getting the short sale approved? How do you know how much to sell the house for? That's a great question that we get quite often. We did hear you say earlier as soon as you get the deed, you know, you want to start marketing the house.
Uh-huh.
How does that work?
Well, first of all, Naples, Florida, that's near my sister. Hey, Karen. Not far from me at all. Second of all, it is you make an offer to the bank. The offer is based on 60% of the lowest value because our market is going down minus any major repairs. So you go in at a value that you believe that the bank will give you an offer for. You start off with a minimum bid, and I usually end up my minimum bid is either $20,000 higher, and it's just a starting point. And what I tell them is that, hey, look, we have a minimum bid of $70,000, but the bank is looking for their highest and best offer. Bring your highest and best. The bank is owed $300,000. So their job is to bring you the highest and best. Well, a lot of students think that the minimum bid is, hey, it's great, I matched the minimum bid. No, that's a starting price. because if I don't give somebody a starting price, sometimes they can't fathom how to get there. They just can't figure it out because it's not the conventional way. And you got to make sure that when you talk to your people, you tell them that this is just a starting price. I'm not sure, though. They just threw that figure out there. I need you to bring your highest and best. They're going to take the highest and best to the bank and the seller.
So you market the house by saying that you're doing a round-robin auction, taking the highest and best offer?
I didn't mention the auction, but yes, we do auctions. Thank you very much. I usually use a sign that says home for sale cheap, and then I let the phones ring off the hook, and I say it's a minimum starting price of $70,000, and the bank sold $300,000. They say to bring your highest and best, and if they say that's not cheap, well, what is? What's your offer? Okay, come back. Give me an offer. You know, and that's where you need to see. You need to see what your market's going to bear for your house while we're putting a price on it. It may not be the price that we put on it. It may not be the price you put on it. And then you hold a live round-robin auction closer to the time that you know where you're at with the bank, and you get a buyer, and you marry the two together. And we go through that step by step by step and at the three-day training and the home study course, and we also do that on the 12-week webinar.
So in your example, if you said you'd minimum offer of 70, what would your offer to the lender be? Did you say 20,000 less? Is that what I heard you say?
My offer is usually about $20,000 less. The issue is that I don't know where we're going to end up at. So I want you to be aware of if the bank comes back at $20,000 and saying, no, it's really worth $70,000 and you start at $70,000, you need to go up $20,000. I can't start too low or it's going in the trash.
Right.
Everyone to understand. That's why I despise Bank of America because they're just doing drive-bys, doing 85% of values, and 85% isn't even the right value in the first place. So really understanding your negotiating side is really important. You just need to know if you don't have a value, hey, the bank sold $300,000. They said they're taking all offers. Bring me any and all offer, I'll submit it. Well, will you submit a $50,000? Sure. And don't be offended. I don't know if that's going to get through, but I'll be happy to submit it. Is that the highest and best offer you can submit? And if you use the buyer information form in the home study course, you already know how high they're going to go. You already know what they're pre-approved for. You already know if they're paying cash or mortgage. So you already got all that information. You just need to climb them up. And that's what I do with a lot of my buyers. I climb them.
Now, when you say you base that offer, that $20,000 more than your offer, are you basing that off of any comps in the area, or are you just throwing it out there?
What I said is how I got my value. I did 60% of the lowest value. So, yeah, it's lower than it is technically about 80% or 90% of the lowest value or middle value at that time. It all depends. Sometimes it's the lowest in the neighborhood. It's
so,
just a starting bidding area to start with. I'm not a scientist other than using my formula.
So as a follow-up to that, if you started at 70, historically, does it move up, or do people see that as a list price?
No, that's why it's a clear communication that you have to make with your people. If you make it that it's a list price, and that's what it is, if you don't explain the conversation that it's just a minimum bid and they're looking for the highest and best, and it's not the list price, and I make it perfectly clear having the conversation with buyers that it has to be higher, and that realistically it's probably going to go for a lot higher. And that's when I said, you might as well, I filled out your buyer information form. I already know where you're at. You're approved for $150,000. What's the highest you're willing to pay for this house? Do you really want it? Well, yeah, I want it. I'll pay $125,000. Well, that's where you need to be. So now I'll take that offer for sure.
Yeah, I've seen several students, they'll take your minimum offer and put it out on their website as if it were the list price and leave it out there for weeks and weeks and weeks as if it were the list price. And therefore, all the offers they were getting were at or below that minimum offer.
Well, they needed to call back that buyer and explain to them that if it's on their website and they haven't held the live auction yet, this is what I normally would do is say, hey, I got your offer. You said you're willing to pay $70,000. I don't know if you're aware of this, but I just wanted to remind you this is a minimum bid. There is going to be a live auction. I just don't know the date yet. So the banks asked me to bring their highest and best offer. So is the $70,000 your highest or best, or should I put you down for higher?
That was the second part of what I was going to say was that they only not only put it out there and left it out there on the website for weeks and weeks and weeks as if it were the list price, they failed to do a round-robin auction. So they never got that bid up higher than what they had it out there listed for, so to speak.
You know, and see, the issue is that you really want to get the value. The issue is that if we get a VPO done and we don't list the property till after the VPO, because the VPO agent always reaches for the list price. It's just what they do. It's just what they're used to doing. It's just the same as the appraisers. So we have open listings or pocket listings with the sellers, so that does not allow us to go ahead and put it on the MLS until the time comes that we list it with our trustee. And they need to reach for the price that it needs to be at. And when you hold an auction, we're asking for a highest and best. And then after the auction, if you can't get where the bank's going to be, we're going to go ahead and list it with an agent. And right now, I am having agents jump on board with SouthPass Realty, which is my real estate company here, that will be taking over for some of the students, because some of the students, I've got, you know, short sales on. And guess what? Dustin, they haven't even gone to their house. I'm amazed. I'm appalled. I've done my part, and no one's gone to the house and held an auction, company policy. So I'm going to go ahead and let them pay 3% for the realtor, and the realtor will do their job. But the object is if you just do it, just listen to me and hold the auction, they will come.
It's best if you market it right, that's for sure. All right, let's see. Next question. This is from Victor. Do you send a complete short sale package to the junior lien holders, or do you handle them differently from the first lien holder? Great question.
Same package, same figures, no changing of the HUDs, no sliding HUDs back and forth, no doing any bad things. It's the same complete package. It has the HOAs on it, the tax liens, everything. So what's really important is that you know your area, you know where you're at on the HOAs, and that's why it's really important that I have conversations with the students, that they make sure they have conversations with the sellers about the HOA information, because of the fact that if there's $10,000, I just got one from one deal that $10,000 just for them to initiate to become a member of the HOA association. How do you like that?
How much?
$10,000.
What?
I about fell off my chair. And the house is $75,000. Do you think those people are going to pay $10,000?
Never heard of such a thing.
Nor have I. I cracked up laughing, but I fell off my chair. Now I got to go and argue it.
Jeez.
You guys are always amazing me. I learned so much from you guys. So much.
So what do you do about the liens, such as the HOA loans, the tax liens, any mechanics liens, and things like that?
All of that is on top of the loan. It's all right there. It's all on the HUD. I just have a loan on another file that has a judgment that I didn't know about that came up on title work. Now, granted, you hear me say title work. Title work is not pulled until after I have a short sale approved. And the reason is that my title company is not going to spend an enormous amount of money pulling all this title work and then it doesn't close. So I want to make sure that I'm already moving. So you know, if you're sellers, you have the conversation, is there anything else that you owe on this property? I mean, do you owe anybody else? Any credit card debts? So it's important that you have that conversation so we know that things attaching to the property don't attach. That's why we use conditional trust. We make sure that once the property is in a trust, we don't have to worry about things attaching. However, if it's within 30 days or less, the title company is going to believe that the seller purposely put it in a trust to avoid paying that judgment, which has just happened on one of Coach Brad's deals, which was a $16,500-some-odd judgment that I got down to $2,500, and I was still going to argue it. They started off at $4,500, and I got them down to $2,500 back and forth because I offered them, guess what, $1,000. And I wanted it even lower, but they just want to close the deal, so we'll be closing that deal either on Friday or Monday because, again, the T-4506 form.
Is that T-4506 form relatively new? I haven't heard about it much until just recently. I've heard you talk about it a lot. Is that something
that's new? It's not new. It's come in my short sale packages. If you go to my website and download all the different short sale packages, you'll see that some of them do include that form. I've got that form by itself, and I don't have it marked as T-4506. I need to have Glenn take care of that for me. But realistically, what it is, it's just a form that the seller signs for taxes, and the good majority of I've seen them all the time have it. But now it's so relevant with the mortgage fraud that has gone on that they believe the sellers are going to be doing fraud back and forth about their taxes, and not only on the short sale side, but on the in buyer side. They always said that the stated loan was a liar's loan because you just say, I'm going to make this kind of money, so I'm going to get a mortgage for this, and I'm going to have this beautiful home, and I'll have no problems paying for it. So now they want to look at your taxes and say, okay, well, are you really making what you say you're making? So they're just verifying it. And the reason why it took a little bit longer, Dustin, on the other ones is that everybody's racing to file their taxes. So we had to wait in line for them to process the taxes because this form will allow it, it faxes in, and then it comes back and tells them what their tax is, you know, what they filed. But if they didn't file and then they're in the stack to be filed, it took that time. That's what the delay was.
So this T-4506 is pretty much for your B to C buyer.
And the A to B, because the A to Bs, I'm seeing them starting to utilize that, so I'm going to ask them to also include that in the packages from now on.
Well, tell me about the A to B. How does that work for the A to B when me or you or any of our listeners could be the buyer? They're having to submit their tax information to do a short sale?
No, I'm sorry for the misunderstanding. The A to B will be only for the seller. The short sale lender wants to make sure the seller's not lying that they have all this money stocked away. On the B to C, it's for the end buyer. That the mortgage company wants to make sure that the buyer's not lying that they can afford the home. So there's two different conversations going on. Short sale lender wants to say, hey, do you have any money to the seller? And the seller says, no, but yeah, I made $400,000 this year, but I'm only telling you on my financial statement I only made this amount. So it's just verification of where they're at in their life. And again, the B to C, the end buyer, they want to make sure they can pay for the house and it's not going to end up in foreclosure.
Got it. So they're not looking to us, the cash buyer, to put up that kind of information.
No, we're cash buyers. And let's clarify that. We do A to B is totally funded. It's total separate entity, total separate transaction, not entity, transaction. Then we resell to the B to C. And that's where I fund all the deals, so they are totally separate. And I don't hold myself out to funding anybody's deals. So only when I'm involved in a deal are we funding deals. That's the nice.
Cool. Now, I just want to remind everybody, I see a lot of familiar faces on the call tonight. Please send us in some of your questions via the GoToWebinar interface so we can get your questions answered, too. So far, all the ones we've been answered are ones that were sent in via email or from the last call. So please, guys, send us in your questions. I see, like I said, a lot of familiar faces, Mark Vilt and Simone and Jerry Carlton, John Kenneth, Sandra. Willie and a lot of others. So please send in your questions via the GoToWebinar interface, and we'll try to get them answered tonight. All right. So next question. This is from Julia. My question is this. I'm needing to sell my condo, And the place I have been is one of the strongest condo complexes around, but the market has taken its toll here too. How do you get the banks to talk about a short sale when you have not missed any payments? Need to sell my condo. The values have dropped about $45,000 below my loan value, which is another $60,000 below purchase price due to the other units that are now bank-owned. Is there anything that can be done here but walk away? So she's kind of saying something like you said earlier, Kimberly, that you want to catch these short sales that aren't where the seller's current or about to be behind or just fell behind, that
right.
you want to catch them after they've been down for a while.
Right.
So Julia here looks like she hasn't missed any payments yet, yet she wants to sell her condo and get out from under it. What kind of advice do you give a seller like herself?
Well, if she's got good credit, why doesn't she try to do a loan modification and see if they will drop the equity in the property and adjust the balance of the property? There's no equity. Adjust the balance of the loan amount. I doubt that will help. I doubt that they'll do that. That offer is out there, but I've seen that depending upon if there's a first and a second. I have seen seconds go away when it's the same mortgage company. However,
I've seen that myself.
Yeah. However, what goes on is that I'm needing to sell my condo. So needing and wanting, is it a need or a want? It looks like it's a need to me. I don't like to tell people to walk away from their property, but some are making business decisions in doing so and looking for the realtor to help them short sale that is educated enough to do short sales or doing the short sales themselves with educated individuals. I don't like getting involved on student deals where it's their own homes and doing negotiations. I keep it at the conflict. And I've seen people come and ask me those questions. They've taken the seminars, and I don't recommend, them coming to the seminar just trying to get me to do their house because that's a conflict and I won't do that. But they really need to analyze what makes sense. Is it a business decision? What do they need to do? The only way they can do that is ask the bank if they'll consider a short sale or a deed in lieu of without coming back after them for a deficiency judgment. So it depends on her exit strategy. So contact the bank, loan mod, deed in lieu. Will they consider a short sale when it's current, or will they probably say, no, I'm sorry, you have to be 30 days behind before we even consider it? And then you have to make the decision what's going to make sense for you. And can you have someone help you instead of just walk away from it?
Now, people like Julia here, would you have us take on these kind of deals knowing that they're not behind yet or about to be? Would you want these deals?
Honestly, it's going to take 10 months on the ones that are just starting to get behind if it's one of the banks that are backed up. So it could take something quicker in 90 days if you found something else. If you knew, first of all, I don't take condos unless they're on the water. Second of all, if you knew you could wait and weather the storm and wait and understand that there's no money, 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 gimme, 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 but you're willing to wait, I would be willing to take the deal. But I don't want to preach that to you because most of the time the students all want instant gratification. Because that's what they want. It's working hard and becoming where you're at right now takes time. It does take time, and I tell everybody that. It can happen if you use the team. It will happen. I'm just saying focus on deals that are longer in the hopper and get them out quicker because those are the ones I really want you to do, and that's what I'm preaching now. Would I turn it away? No. But it's a condo. I would turn that one away.
But you do, and I want to make sure everybody hears this, you can do short sales where they're not behind on payments. You can turn in the package, but you may have to wait for the seller to fall behind before the bank will actually do anything about it.
They will. In fact, on Mike Barone's file, I had called in, and I know the guy was behind, but they lied and said he was current, and I'm like, you got to be crazy. But that's what they said to me because they throw them in loan modification. I mean, the banks do everything they can to get their money. So what I say for a starting out person who wants to make money, pass, next, there's plenty of them out there. would I say something to like a Simone and Mark that's got tons in the hopper that they can handle it? They're stuff in the pipeline. They're go-getters. Get it. Throw it in. But don't bring me somebody who's wanting money yesterday because it's going to take some time to get it.
Yep. Just realize you're not going to be cashing out in 30 days. That's all.
Thank you.
Okay.
I want them cashing out in 30 days.
All right. Karen has several questions. Do you talk to junior or lien holders? When and how do you approach them?
I approach them at the same time that I end up submitting the short sale package through. Did you have a comment? I'm sorry.
Yeah, I was going to say, that was a good, great, I was going to kind of add to that. Do you contact the junior lien holder at the same time, or do you wait and work something out with the first, see what you get, then go to the junior lien holder, or do you go to the junior lien holder first, take care of them, and then go back to the first, or does it matter?
Sometimes it's a stalemate. The first wants the second to say yes, the second wants the first to say yes, and they don't want to do it back and forth. So you need to submit your package the exact same time, and I just tell them, look, they're working it, they're approving it, give me your short sale approval letter so that I can move on. So I work with them at the exact same time. The conversation is this is how much the first is only going to give you, $1,000, that's it, nothing more. And they usually complain. So you want to make sure that you contact them at the exact same time, because if you don't, the first might say, I'm not going to even push this through until you have the second approved, because it's a waste of my time. It's a stalemate. It's like checkmate. Wow. Where are you?
I hit a button by mistake. So her next question is, do you call the lender and tell them that you want to fax them an authorization to release info, or do you have the borrower call and add you to their account? That's a good question.
Well, you cannot have the borrower call because you don't know who it is anyway. So when you talk to the bank, they say, there's no way. I don't know if this is you. Of course you can say it's you. Of course you can add the Social Security number and all this. They have to have it in writing. So the answer is you call the bank, get their fax number, because there's a different fax number for authorizations than there are for short sale packages. And you ask the borrower to sign the authorization to release in the package that you have from the home study course in the 12-week training, and you use that to get them in to get your deal going. They will not allow you just to call in. It has to be in writing. Sometimes notarized, too. GMAC right now is asking them to start notarizing their authorizations.
Okay, good answer. She's got a couple questions. Here's another one. How much of a discount can you expect from a first lien holder in this market?
Well, here's the numbers. Cheryl just closed on the deal and was owed $220,000 on a first, and we got it down to $30,000. Did you hear me right?
I heard you, but I'm just, how, Kimberly? How did you get it down so low?
Are you stunned, amazed, and just
$30,000 for 200-something thousand
awesome.
Yes, I am.
Awesome. Yeah, I'm just so great. No, it's called a team effort, and it's all the facts that are provided. It's all the information. It's about the BPO. It's all a package combined. It's all negotiating, and it's all getting it out there, a complete package. So the system, it really is, and are they all a slam dunk like that? Not all. Again, it all plays into a complete package. So when
what was her total profit on that deal?
$33,000 some odd dollars. And Simone and Mark, listen to this. Like I said, it was $30,000. They sold it for $62,000. I called her on a Monday. I said, it's approved. And I didn't know she had buyers. She was horting her buyers because she's a realtor and she's used to dealing by herself. I said, do you have buyers? She says, well, yeah, I got buyers. She says, well, I could get buyers for $75,000. And I said, could you really? I mean, the market keeps changing. You really can't get unless the buyer's going to pay. She's been marketing it. And she's been marketing it. She could have got whatever there was. And if there was a $75,000 buyer sitting around, then we would have had them. But we went to the neighbor. The neighbor, started at $55,000. The other guy started at $62,000. And so the neighbor countered at $62,000. I said, sell it to the neighbor. because I want to, you know, you want to build rapport. And then the neighbor said, well, I thought you were going to loan the money, the difference. And we're like, no. And Cheryl says, now what do I do? I said, call back that other cash buyer, sign it, and get it done. So she did that on a Friday. Well, I had to laugh. She called me on Friday. She says, why do we need to close right away? I said, because you got a short sale and you want a check, right? She says, yeah. So she closed it on the next Monday. So got an approval on a Monday and closed the next Monday. How you like that? $33,000. Not bad for her first deal, huh?
That was her. I want to emphasize that was her first deal.
It was.
So some of them are making nice profits. Some of them, I know you closed one, I think it was last week or so, it was like $8,000.
Yes.
So yeah. Some of them are high, some of them are low, but it's all cash, so it's good.
I'm not putting any fake numbers out there. I'm putting the real facts. Is it okay to put a for sale sign in the yard? Yeah. You want to put home for sale cheap. And you want to make sure that before that BPO agent comes, you're an hour out there ahead of time yanking all those signs out. And everything, the house is clean, ready to go for your BPO agent. Because they show up half an hour to an hour early. They've already tried to get into your house because they've got so many to do. So it is okay to put a for sale sign, but it says home for sale cheap because that phone will ring off the hook.
Now, what did you say about being clean?
There is no flyers, thank you. Clean meaning no flyers, no evidence of your marketing material.
Got it. Okay. I thought you meant clean the house up for them. Like, no.
No, I'm glad you clarified that. My mind was clean of material.
Got it. Okay. Got a couple live questions here from the audience. If you have any live questions, please go ahead and send them in now via the GoToWebinar interface because we are getting ready to wrap up the call here for this evening. Got time for a few more questions. This first one is from Mark Vilt.
Hey, Mark.
If a short sale is being processed and waiting on BPO and a number from the bank, how do you want us to arrive at the starting bid price to hold these weekend auctions? SWAG was his question. Scientific Wild Ask, yes. And he logged on a little late, so you did talk about this a little bit earlier. But go ahead and, if you don't mind, answer it again.
Sure, because you're doing deals with me, you should be getting letters when they are completely ready to go. When I get a complete short sale package in, and I know they're getting better and better because you guys are getting better and better, I send you a letter telling you what your minimum bid is. What the bank offer was submitted and what the bank was owed. Now, remember, I've been on vacation, so I went away for a week. So if there wasn't everything ready or I didn't get to those three or four files that were in the office, you didn't get that question answered on some of your deals. So tomorrow at 3 o'clock, we will be going over those values. But I give that information out to them. If you're working on your own deals, again, We went over how it starts.
Okay.
How you figure it out, the formula. That's all in the home study course, and we talk about that on the 12-week live training.
Okay. You ready for the next question?
I am.
And this is from Kenneth Cooper. After a short sale, what has been your experience where investors – now have a tax bill due to the investment settlement? I'm not sure. Let me see if I can rephrase this question. Now have a tax bill due to the investment settlement, the positive reduction from the IRS. I think he's asking if you do a short sale and they get a 1099,
yep.
what do you do about it? I think that's what he was asking.
Yeah, that's exactly what he's asking. First of all, if it is an investor, they have a choice between a 1099 or a deficiency judgment. So if they get a 1099, anybody who gets it, yes, he says. If it's a 1099, then it becomes a taxable event because it's forgiven money. Forgiven money. If it's a homestead house where the seller lives in it, the bank can't give a 1099 to them because President Bush said that they can't do that, and they can claim up to $2 million of a loss. They can only go after the seller for deficiency judgment. So let me go back to the investor. So if the investor had bought the place for $300,000, Ken, and you short sailed it and you got it for $150,000, let's say half, and then you sold it, you made a profit of $200,000. There's still the $150,000 difference from the $300,000 was owed, and then the short sale of $150,000. That's $150,000 loss. They didn't gain anything. They bought it for $300,000. You add the two together. Isn't that considered a wash? They lost money on that. They didn't gain any money on that. And if their liabilities outweigh their assets, then they can file a C-982 form with the CPA. And again, I'm going to do a disclaimer. I'm not an attorney. I'm not a CPA. So I'm not giving legal advice or tax advice, but I'm telling you based on the information that I know of, most of the time when they get these forms, they end up being able to create losses and take it either forward or back. I'm finding out. I just had a CPA telling me, come have all the investors that have these 1099s, I'm able to carry the losses forward. And I'm like, what? They're getting losses. They're not paying taxable events. So it may not be a taxable event for them. So they have to be told that. If there are nobody out there arguing that, hey, instead of the 1099, I'm going to go after them for a deficiency judgment, they can reserve that deficiency judgment for up to 10 years and still go after them. So things might look bad now, but down the road, they can go back after them later on. So you want to be able to talk to them and tell them what's the worst case scenario, and we do our best. Now, I used to say, and I've got to change this percentage, so I want you all to be aware of it. It was 98% success rate of getting deficiency judgments waived. Well, the banks are getting pretty doggone smart, and they're now just releasing it, and they're not giving me waivers of deficiency judgments. So I'll be reducing that percentage down, and it's a lesser amount. But I just talked to Simone's buyer or seller, and I explained to them the difference and how that works. And he has the choice. The seller has the choice at the very end. Do you want a foreclosure on your record where it hits your FICO score, 250 points, or do you want a short sell, which is 100 points? Or do you want to wait and hope and pray that they do come after you later on, or which later on, when they sell the house, it's going to go down. It's going to go down in value. Yeah, they should go see a CPA and talk to their CPA. But realistically, it's a business decision. You're going to ask them, Ken, in the meantime, if you don't do this, what are you going to do? What are you going to do? Oh, I'm just going to file bankruptcy. Well, hunky-dory. Well, there goes your 1099 out the door. There goes your deficiency judgment. But however, you really want to start over, don't you? Yeah, you want to start over. You want a fresh life, fresh start. Well, you got to take care of this foreclosure because the banks aren't all going to take care of them. There's houses that will sit out there for years sometimes, but the bank's not touching it because it doesn't make sense for them to take it back yet. It's amazing. I find it all the time. So it has to do with your conversation with your sellers and having that conversation. I have a CD that I talk to all my sellers that you learn a lot of this communication with and what to say to the sellers so that they understand that it is a smart idea for them on some, and I do recommend they consult their CPA or attorney so that they have a better understanding. But in the end, you ask them, what are you going to do? Oh, I'm just going to let it go into foreclosure, or I'm going to walk away. So having someone fight for you and help you is better than doing nothing. Because people bury their head in the sand.
Yep. So if your seller gets a 1099 for any reason, you need to have them talk to whoever prepares their taxes, their CPA or accountant, and they can advise them how to get that 1099 waived. And I thought I heard you mention the form number, Kim. I don't happen to have it memorized.
C-982 form. And I want you to know, it's really funny, I have a nephew that had a house bought out in Lehigh Acres. Those of you who are from Naples area, you understand. And I told him not to buy when they were doing the bus tours out there. It used to drive me crazy when I worked in Michigan. And he got the 1099 on a deal. It's a C-982 form. he got a 1099, and it was an investment property. And I said, you can't be getting the 1099. I'm still negotiating on that deal. He says, well, I don't want to give it back. I said, what do you mean? He said, my CPA said I have a loss. I'm keeping it. And when I called the bank, because they're selling out, it's a small bank, Riverside's being taken over by FDIC, they said, send it back. They made a mistake. And I can't get him to send it back because he's already filed his taxes and he's already gotten a loss. He's not paying anything on it, so he's happy. It's amazing. So it might make more sense for them to talk to somebody to realize it's not a bad thing. Just because we think 1099s are a bad thing, it's not a bad thing for some. It's a good thing.
That's why you need to talk to your tax professional.
Yes, sir.
Now, Mark had another question. Mark Vilt, when an offer is received on a property and foreclosure has gone wild, accepts the contract, what should we do with the one, two, or three other possible buyers who also like the property? If we let them walk, we possibly lose another buyer if the first buyer falls apart. Should we still take contracts or have backup contracts?
Absolutely. Send them a contract. And it's not that I'm accepting it, it's you're accepting it because you're the trustee. What we do is that we evaluate, and it takes some time, some of the evaluations, because when I get a deal in the office, it might take a response time from the mitigator side. So it's not me who's delaying your deals. I'm waiting on the bank. I got to marry the two together. So if the mitigator's not getting back with me and the offer's not where we're at, I may not accept it right away. So I want you to take lots of backup offers, or I may not tell you to accept it right away. So you do have backup offers. I have some students that are constantly taking backup offers. I do not accept that you or expect for you to take deposits, earnest money deposits from those people if they're backup offers, unless you tell them that they are backup offers.
That's a great point, Kimberly. I'm not a realtor. You are. How do you write up a contract and say that it's a backup offer, not the real offer, not the real contract? How do you do that?
First of all, I don't have the seller sign it, so it's pretty clear it's a backup offer. When it comes through here on any files that I get from realtors, I just let them know that they're backup and the seller doesn't sign it. And I don't ask for an earnest money deposit. That goes to the title company, and you know, it's really important that you understand some as a seller yourself, you're allowed to take this earnest money deposit because you're just by yourself, you're the seller, you can take it. But the issue is, I found one student that had like multiple offers and was taking $1,000 deposits, and I'm like, no, you can't do that. But they only signed one contract, so it's important that you don't take the deposits. And I know it's not as strong as a backup offer, but if you're going to do a backup offer and they want to put a deposit, it needs to go to a title company for holding purposes.
Okay, so we just take the contract from the buyer. We as seller, the trustee, don't sign it and don't take the earnest money, and that's considered a backup offer.
Yeah, and you tell them they're backup. And you make sure you stay in contact with them. I got one guy saying, what do you mean? I'm ready to buy it. I don't want to be backup.
Okay. And Mark had a follow-up question about the 1099.
Yeah.
He said, it sounds like a good thing to get a 1099, right? At least then the bank can't come out after them for deficiency judgment. Is that correct?
That is correct. For some individuals, if they choose to do that. That was a conversation we had with his seller. It's an either-or process. The bank can do either-or. So if it is a homestead house and they decide to send the 1099, that doesn't mean that it's a taxable event to you because you have that exemption. They still send it. They just don't have to claim it. Something of that sort, they got to go to their CPA. It's not something that they have to claim because there's that exemption, but they still send it. And that means that they can't go after for a deficiency judgment. So our Mr. Seller was happy about that, was hoping he was going to get that versus a deficiency judgment because it wasn't a clear understanding whether they're going to do it. But here's one of the tricks of the trade that I said to the Mr. Seller was most of the time, and this is the truth, if they're going to come after you for a deficiency judgment, I have promissory notes signed at the time of closing. and I negotiate that down lower. And that's when it's like $150,000 goes down to $30,000 at $100 a month with 0% interest until paid, Ken. So that's how it works a lot with the negotiations time. If they're going to go after them, they mostly tell you that at that point. But like I said, some are just reserving the right later, and then now they've got to sell it to somebody, and then they got to start a legal action to get the deficiency judgment and serve them and do the processing and so forth. But I believe they're going to do that. I'm seeing it more and more. I believe that they're going to save it because they know our economy is heading back upward. The seller's not always going to be down in the gutters, you know?
Yeah, we were talking about that the other day. I haven't seen them come back after a foreclosure before with a deficiency judgment. Have you seen that happen before?
Well, you know, at the last event, Eric from Michigan was telling me that someone had sold to this attorney here in the Florida area some of those files and that they were going after them because they sell it peanuts, you know, pennies on the dollar. And they were going after them. Now, whether they're collectible is one thing, but yeah.
Yeah. Well, like you said, the bank's getting clever.
Well, they have to make up some of their loss. So that's why I said my percentage is going to change because it's becoming, you know, an industry that is going cross board. I've noticed that the last couple of approvals that, you know, they're adamant. Of course, I did get, you know, some of them fully approved. Like I just got one. From Bank of America that says that it says that the short sale is contingent upon the investors receiving a promissory note. We reserve the right to collect the full amount. However, they got some crazy stuff on here that says they may pursue a deficiency judgment for the difference in the payment received and the total balance due unless agreed otherwise or prohibited by law if the short sale closes on the loan referenced above. In addition, if this loan is covered by the mortgage insurance, the mortgage insurance company may reserve the right to pursue the seller for the deficiency based on the terms of the mortgage insurance policy. Furthermore, there may be tax consequences associated with entering into a short sale. The seller is encouraged to seek guidance from an independent tax advisor and/or attorney before proceeding with the short sale. However, then this is our next paragraph. If the short sale is contingent upon BAC, Home Loan Servicing, LP, and or its investors receiving a promissory note, we will reserve the right to collect the full amount of the new promissory note, which may lead us to pursuing a deficiency on that balance should the need arise. If the short sale does not close, then we will pursue all remedies under our note and mortgage. So it talks about that this is the way it works, and then you go to the second page, and it says promissory note zero. So they are, you know, it's double talk at times on their files. So they are reserving some rights later on, but if this is a homestead house and they 1099 them, they've lost the right for deficiency judgment.
Right.
But all three.
So we were talking about whether they're going to come back, you know, several years from now, start collecting on all these deficiency judgments, all these promissory notes. So I heard you say something earlier I haven't heard you say before, that they have up to 10 years to do that. Because I was wondering if there's any kind of, like, limitation on that. And I heard you say 10 years. They can come back up to 10 years, which is a long time.
Yeah, the judgments are renewable for up to 10 years. I am assuming, and I'm not an attorney, that after 18 years working for attorneys, that if the judgment's good for 10 years, that they have the rights. That's something I probably need to consult with an attorney to confirm how long they really have to come after them. But I quoted that to a seller. We had that discussion, didn't we, Simone? She about cringed on the other line. She should be laughing pretty hard right now. A lot of times when I have a conversation with a seller, everybody, the student usually cringes, but the sellers need to know all this, and I don't pull any punches. You know.
Well, let me ask you this. If you do a short sale and they don't get a 1099, we assume they're going to get a deficiency judgment. How do they get that deficiency judgment? They have to go to court to be awarded a deficiency judgment?
Yep. They do. So it takes time. It does take time.
So it's not, and that's something we haven't really talked about before, so it's not automatic.
No. They're reserving the right for it. The right, reserving.
I assume, and you tell me if I'm wrong or not, they get the they do the short sale, you guys go your separate ways, they get paid off, and then let's just say a year later, 6 months later, they take them back to court to attempt to get a deficiency judgment?
That's my understanding, yes.
And then if they get it, they have to somehow figure out a way to collect on that deficiency judgment?
Correct. So you can't get blood out of a turnip. These people will immediately go file bankruptcy and it will go bye-bye.
One of my friends I was talking to the other day, he was talking about deficiency judgments. He was saying in states like Texas, and I don't know if this is true or not, this is what he told me, that even if the bank did get a deficiency judgment, they cannot garnish your wages in Texas. I don't know if that's true or not, but it was interesting. I'm like, so what's the point?
I've never heard of that because if they start, I would have to say that's interesting.
Yeah, like I said, I don't know if it's true or not, but it was interesting to thought.
I could always garnish someone's wages. I was the one working in collections. I was the one getting your guys' tax refund so that I could pay my attorney that I worked with. Let's check a little bit. I want to talk before we get off. I know we're going on some questions, but I know you guys were talking about that HAPA. Everyone thought HAPA law. It's HAPA, which means that it happens to be it's the Home Affordable Foreclosure Alternatives Program, which the banks were supposed to, in December, decide if they wanted to jump on board or not. And what I was told, it was an option. So it is an option for them to jump on board. But it's so funny is that they said, well, yeah, the banks can go ahead and jump on board, and we'll pay them $1,000 per transaction if they take a short sale. What they were trying to do was to get the banks to jump on board, give them a timeline, and I crack up laughing, a timeline to do tasks and things. Gee whiz, we're working with Bank of America, and if I don't do my task quick enough, they throw me off, and then I got to call them up and tell them that they're not doing their task, and they could be a week behind even though I call every day. You can't get big banks to do tasks. You can't be on a time limit. In 10 days, you'll know whether your short sale's approved. Right. It's a bunch of crock. And that's what I really believe it is. And that Home Affordable Program is just trying to get them lined up. I was also found out that these are loans for first lien holders that are not owned or guaranteed by Fannie Mae or Freddie Mac. Oh, my God. Well, there goes half the loans. So they all had to jump on board. The homeowner had to go through the HAP program, which is the Home Affordable Modification Program, and that's a bunch of crock because they can't even get home loan modification programs through. Obama gave all the money to all the companies, and all the higher people ended up spending it or keeping it or whatever. So the point is that you think that this new program is going to be the all what we've been looking for. It's not. It's nothing that's going to kill our short sales. You're going to find out also, if they decide to do this, that they put a 90-day deed restriction on it, so they can't sell. The buyer has to agree to this, and it's just crazy, some of the stuff that they say that can do. 90 days not to flip it. You talk about 30-day flips not allowed to flip. It's just so crazy, Dustin. It says, notice that the sale must represent an arm's-length transaction that the purchaser may not sell the property within 90 calendar days of the closing. They want the banks to come up and say, okay, I'm going to tell you what I want for the property. Well, the problem is what they want, what they get are two different things. I'm fighting with on Simone and Mark's deal. They just told me they want $42,800 net. I had it approved at $32,000 net in 30 days. Now that's what they want. Well, what if the house won't appraise for that amount? A net is how much the bank wants in the pocket. The purchase price is more like $60,000. So what if the house won't appraise for that? Well, they're crazy. They want the buyer or the realtor to do some contributions here. In addition, they talk about that they want the realtors on REOs when they come back to pay for the fix-up costs for the houses, for the contractors. That's a crock. Realtors are starving and are upside down. Do you think that's going to happen? It's not. So the incentive for the bank to get involved is $1,000. Guess what? That's 1 week worth of pay for a secretary or two secretaries, and it's gone. $1,000 is nothing that's going to pay a bank anything. So it's just a bunch of jokes. It really is, and you've got to go through the home affordable program first. You got to go through the modification program, so you got to qualify and be denied for that. Your seller has to agree. There's time limits. There's all this. This isn't going to help anybody. It hasn't helped anybody. I had gotten a guy who does funding on short sales, Dustin, who sent me this. And honestly, I got this 88 pages, guys, 88 pages. That's just crazy. I went to bed sleeping with it until I finally read through it, and I'm like, this is a bunch of crock. It's a waste of my time reading it. This is an option. I'm not going to agree to it. My sellers won't agree to it. And, you know, it all depends on where you're going. Well, my buyers aren't going to agree that they're not going to flip it in 90 days. Hello? That's a deed restriction. They can't do that. So, realistically, this is just another program that came out. President Obama is trying to save the world. That you can't save the world other than do one short sale at a time. The guidelines are going to change. The banks are going to have to open up their doors even harder. That's why I stuck with Bank of America for a while, because even after they pulled their stunt, I thought they'd open up the doors. And, of course, I got 35 files with them. But I'm not taking any more right now because I'm tired and they don't know their system. They create a new system. They're going to have to create a system they claim about putting paper, go paperless, Dustin. You know how hard it was for you when you created all of your stuff. You got deed flowed. We got websites. Can you imagine what's going to happen when they create a system that then they got to train these people how to use it, and then they got to train us how to use it? It's not going to work. It's not going to happen.
Yeah, they have all kinds of problems. Equator as it is.
Exactly, and Equator's with Bank of America. So, you know, most of the time that system's down. We'll call people. The people say, oh, we're getting – one guy said he says he's getting good at playing paper football. I'm like, oh, my God, you know, driving me crazy. Well, I'm being screamed and yelled at by realtors, buyers, and mortgage brokers. How come these files aren't closing and your files are down? You know, you can't even look on a screen. You're killing me here. So that's Bank of America. Different animal. That's why I don't want it. Good luck if you guys do. I wish you all the best. I recommend you guys all mitigate one deal. Bank of America.
Does this half a law have anything to do with the fact what I heard about Obama letting people get the seller get $1,500 back at closing on the HUD?
Oh, thank you.
Is that part of the HAFA program?
It is part of the HAFA program, and it's not a law. It's an option. He passed it. It was an option for banks to get on board. I thought it was a law too. The Treasury Department had to agree and be eligible and sign up with the Treasury Department. So I bet you know, all these people just jumped on board.
Well, the one part I heard you leave out that I heard about was that something about as of April, according to HAFA law, whatever it was, the banks had to respond to our short sale offer within 10 days.
That's what I said. That's a bunch of crock. There's no way they're going to do that. I did respond to that. I can't get them sometimes to get my stuff uploaded in 10 days. There's no way that they can do that. There's just no way.
Well,
I'm telling you right now.
I apologize if I didn't hear you say that.
That's okay.
But, yeah, that was the big thing I was hearing. Hey, as of April, short sales are going to be easier because they're going to respond quicker.
Well, you know, see, here's the happy on this. The happy is on that it makes it look like, one, the bank's getting $1,000. Woohoo! Second, they're making the second agree to no more than up to $3,000. Woohoo! They're making the bank agree to go ahead and set a price. And they're also, if I'm not mistaken, they're not even allowing them to go after the sellers. So there's things in here. But again, it's not backed on, not owned or guaranteed by Fannie Mae or Freddie Mac. Fannie Mae buys all FHA loans, guys. So if they had an FHA loan, guess what? Doesn't qualify. So the newer banks could do this, Dustin. But would that help us? No, right. A 90-day flip law there.
So this is a relatively new program. I heard you say it's optional. Does that mean is this something the seller has to apply for?
The bank
How does one get involved in this optional program even if they wanted to?
The bank has to agree in the first place. So the banks had to respond by December to say, yes, they want to be on board. And I did get through Equator saying, yes, the half a law, blah, blah, blah. Well, yeah, they want the half a law because they're going to get something out of it. But it's the type of loan it is and if they'll allow it. And in addition, I lost my train. I got carried away then. In addition, with the half a law is that the seller has to qualify through a home loan modification program. So they go through that, eats up a lot of time, can't qualify. Then they will consider a deed in lieu of foreclosure. Well, does that help you any? Maybe, maybe not. If there's a second mortgage, a deed in lieu, the first will definitely take it, and the second will come after you for sure. But they say the requirements are certain things in deed in lieu. I was just reading that. It's been a while. I put deadlines and information on it. I like to read right from it because, you know, honestly, there's so much that goes on in the world of short sales. If you're working it day in and day out, you got to stay on board with everything. So I usually highlight and have things in front of me. So I'm able to see, but then they have a choice of a deed in lieu, where they'll deed the property back, and then where's your money? House is gone. Or they can do the short sale process. And now they just put you in it that you have to keep the house for 90 days. So is that going to help investors? No. It's going to help sellers? Maybe. So now you got to deal with a seller that has to go through all that crap because that's exactly what they're going to go through and try to get it through there. If they couldn't get a home loan modification program first with Bank of America, what makes them think they're going to get it now? In 10 days? Ha! Right. Good luck.
Well, I just printed I got that a copy of that half a thing from you today, so I'm going to print it out, see if I can do a little reading on it myself. And we'll just have to keep an eye on it and see how what becomes of it and how it's going
to
affect our business.
Yeah, we won't be joining any deals that we got. We won't be involved because we're not buying and holding. If you guys are buying and holding, there you go. Again, not owned or guaranteed by Freddie Mac or Fannie Mae.
Now, what I heard you say we won't be getting involved. Well, if we're doing a short sale on a house, how do we know we're not already involved?
Well, because I won't allow the seller to agree to that. The seller has to make an agreement.
Okay.
The bank agreed. Again, the seller has to agree, and I won't agree.
Well, is that something the bank asked them to participate in? See, it's still kind of vague to me.
You know, it says the servicer accepts the short pay as full satisfaction. Let me see. The bank asked them to agree. I forget the dates. I think we've got to do it in such time, but I put a bunch of crap on the side, so it's a bunch of crock.
Well, it's already, April 13th? So this has been in effect for 13 days now?
Yeah,
as you're dealing with these lenders, have they asked you to participate in this program? Have they mentioned it to you? Have they said anything about it whatsoever?
Nope.
Okay.
Nope.
That's what I said. It's just so new. Looking forward to seeing how it pans out.
Yeah, they keep the minimum acceptable net proceeds for not less than 120 days, so you got 4 months to close it. Then they said the term of the short sale may be extended at the discretion of the servicer for up to a total of 12 months. They say that they're not going to cut the commission, the amount of real estate commission that may be paid not to exceed 6%, because they've been cutting realtor commission.
Yep,
so the realtors have been preaching, woo, woo, woo. It might work on some of the other ends, but, you know, what they end up doing is getting a listing, push the seller through a loan modification. They do all the paperwork, and then they lose their listing, can't find a buyer. But, again, there's all kinds of obligations that they have to comply with. The borrower must sign and return the short sale agreement within 14 days from its effective date, along with a copy of the real estate broker's license agreement information regarding any subordinate liens. I mean, there's a lot of things that need to be done. I think it's a crock. I'm not going to agree to it. None of my sellers are going to agree to it unless they want to live in the home. And if they do, then they, you know, they just need to have the house back. But most of our sellers we deal with, our houses are vacant. They're done with it. They made business decisions. They've moved on. They've had enough with these banks, and they can see right through the craziness. A wolf in sheep's clothing is what I was going to say.
All right. Well, we're almost we are out of time. I was going to say we're almost out of time.
We've been out of time for a while here.
I was going to say we're definitely a little over tonight. We've got a few more questions. I think we're gonna we'll probably save them till after the webinar is over. And if we want to, we can hang around and answer a few more questions if you want to, for Simone and Mark. But I wanted you to take the next few minutes to tell everybody about the live training event we have coming up here in Atlanta real soon, so that they can all come and join us in Atlanta in May.
Yeah. Do you have that done like that on purpose? It's missing the rest of the stuff.
No, these are your slides.
You click it again.
Okay.
It's gone. There it is. Click it one more time. Magical.
Okay.
All right. Didn't know that there was three little clicks on that. First of all, what I have is I want everyone to know that I have a home study course with 11 audio CDs. It's like you being a fly in the office, and you really learn a lot of stuff. It's seller conversation, buyer conversation, and mitigator conversations, and you're able to hear everything inside and out. And basically, it's uncensored and inhibited. So if you ever call my office, it sounds like a telemarketing office, and I didn't realize that so much until I called in and I heard all the girls and stuff in the background. But you can hear everything verbatim. Now, my calls aren't as telemarketing, but you can hear me talking to the sellers and the mitigators and the buyers. And knowing exactly what to say really helps you out. That value is normal of $997. Can you go ahead and – can I take control? Or do you click? Can I take control? Dustin? You muted yourself.
Yes, try taking the control. I'll give it to you.
I'm trying.
All right, I'll just go ahead. I'll click next for you.
Please. And then in addition, basically you have a forms list, all the forms you need to do a short sale with an autofill that can do 20 documents in 10 minutes or less. Even a second grader can do it, because I know you guys cannot stand forms. That's one of the things. It's simple. It's easy. It's not a software system. It's so dead drop easy that it drives everybody crazy, that our software techies, that they're like, wow, it's too easy. But that's what I wanted, something easy, something I used as a legal secretary. Keep clicking all those. I don't get it. You get a quick reference guide for what to say to the seller about all the forms, and also you get the reference guide for you as to explaining what the forms are, because there's certain things to know. When I worked for the attorneys, it was always a layman version of what I needed to say, what that form was, and that's what you get. Also, the value of that is $49. You get the how to bid at an auction booklet along with step-by-step instructions about the live auction DVD. So you see me live doing an auction. That's $199. Keep clicking. And, y'all, thank you for listening and waiting for us to go through this. The call tonight was basically to share about how short sales work, but because we have a 3-day training event, we've added this in for you. You do get a 30 days of one-on-one personal coach assigned to you specifically for unlimited telephone support for when you come to the event, a value of $250. You also get email and fax with me, personal mentorship by email and fax only, the value of $1,000 for 6 months. Those of you on the phone call, we have individuals who are in coaching programs who get additional coaches that have had an enormous amount of experience that are sharing with you, that are really doing deals. Also, you get all the private money you need to fund short sale flips at a reduced fee. So it really helps to know that you've got the money to close the deal. You're able to go ahead and submit the deals to our office and split 50-50. That's going away. after this event. That's going away. I want only people in coaching programs, so I just want you to be aware of it. All of it comes in. You get the property submitted on our website to be placed on, so we're able to work as a group and pool our buyers together. All of that combined came up to $2,495. So you can see all of the benefits that you're going to get. Go ahead and click it again. So you have the home study course, you have the mentorship, you have the auctions, you have 6 months of email and fax. Now, the training event is coming as an extra bonus for you and a partner, which is two people. That's May 21st, 22nd, and 23rd. I've left that date. We've talked about changing it because we have a conflict with one of the individuals that I want there. And it really is important that I have a team. I do teams. So I have coaches that help teach. There's the coaches are going to be there. The mitigator is going to be there. It's live. That value is normally $995. All of that combined tonight is at a discount. These are my future millionaires having fun at the event that you can see. They have cash checks. Bridget here on the right, the redhead, had, like, after going to the event, ended up with $35,000. So I know you all want a scholarship and you want a short sale, right? Of course you do. All of that combined, you can get that for $697 investment. Go ahead and click that. For $697, but you can see all of this is $3,490. We're looking for a team. I can tell you, I don't want people just doing courses. I want people that want to work as a team. I want a positive team. I want a lifelong team. And so what I've done is that I've reduced it to $697, and I know there's other speakers out there, and they're selling a bunch of stuff. I'm not selling a bunch of stuff. I'm selling you a system that does work. If you work the system and you work as a team, definitely does work. If you want to work by yourself, you can buy the system and go for yourself. You got 6 months of email and fax, and I do respond back to them in 24 to 72 hours. That's great, but we're really looking to build a team in every state. Every location. That's where Dustin is doing the Atlanta, Georgia office, which is really kicking off and really good to have as a group. Now,
and
we have
we,
yes.
Because there's one more bonus tonight as well you're going to throw in for the $697.
Absolutely, and that's what you and I shared with was the 12-week online training course, which I was just talking about, where I literally told you how to do a BPO and walked you through all of the different things to look for and how that works and how to influence it and what the package looked like. A lot of those questions were answered online, and that's up and will be uploaded soon for everyone for the 12-week online training. Now, we're on our 10th week. That's okay.
Yeah, last week was week 10.
The reason why it's okay is that you're able to play it at your leisure because some people want to just run through it. Getting people 3 days at the live event is sometimes pulling teeth. I have kids. I had a husband. I understand. You know, it's just you need to make sure that you're organized and ready to go. And sometimes doing it at home is the easiest for a lot of people. So we're giving you both the best worlds. We give you everything that we have in the home study course. And that I'm going to teach to you at the three-day training, but we're giving it a little bit at a time, little pieces, little bitty pieces, so that you can digest it and you're able to go ahead and go through it. And that value is $997, and we're throwing it all in tonight as a bonus. That is a true bonus because we really want you to jump on board with us when we come to Atlanta, Georgia. We'd be happy to fill you in there, and Dustin's excited, and, you know, he's really helped out. So all of that, the whole package, you receive the home study course, the coaching, the three-day training event, the 12-week online training, and all the bonuses that we talked about for $697. Now, I can't make it any easier for you. I've had speakers tell me that's too cheap. Well, they won't see the value in it. You know what? I don't care. This is what it is. If you're really serious about it, there's no fluff. You're going to make money as long as you work the program. You listen to me, change things up, follow the system. Go right now to SuperSmart. Where's the email? Or where's the domain name? SuperSmartWebProfits.com, right?
Yep, SuperSmartWebProfits.com. This is what our homepage looks like. and you will see a link over to the side that says FGW Live Training Plus Webinar. And when you go to check out, it's going to say $997 because that's what it is. But for the next few days, I think, Kimberly, you said till Friday night at midnight,
yep,
they can use coupon code FGWATL. That stands for Full Closures Gone Wild Atlanta. FGWATL. Use that coupon code when you go to check out, and you get everything Kimberly just mentioned for $697. That's supersmartwebprofits.com. Click on the FGW Live Training Plus Webinar link right there and put in coupon code FGWATL, and it'll take $300 off.
Sweet. Well, we have Jerry on the phone that could give a testimonial. We had Simone and Mark on the call that could give a testimonial. So those are people who have already gone through the training. They definitely have made their money back plus paid for their coaching program. There's just a heck of a lot more to come, and that's where you need to go right now is to call 678-957-0220 extension 2. Dustin, you want to repeat that?
Yes, 678-957-0220 extension 2 if you need to call us and talk to us for some reason. Otherwise, you can just go to supersmartwebprofits.com and order right off the homepage. You can also open up a help ticket if you need any additional help at supersmartsupport.com. That's supersmartsupport.com. So there you have it, several ways to get a hold of us, to order online, or to get any additional questions answered.
Now, we do have the next week training is going to be on finding buyers, week 11. So that would be good if you're looking for buyers right now. We'll be talking about that. And then we do the Power Hour every second Tuesday of the month, which you all joined in on, and we will be talking about answering more questions because that seems to be the popular thing is answering your guys' questions.
Yeah, and we didn't get through them all again tonight, Kimberly. We got so many to come in. But hey, we answered some good ones tonight. I think everybody really enjoyed it. In fact, we've got a couple others that have come in since we've been talking here. So what we'll do is I'll just thank everybody and wrap this call up for this evening. So thank you, everyone, and good night, and God bless, and we'll see you next month.